Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as I'm sure you know, President Bush is still hoping to get a Middle East peace agreement by the time he leaves office next year, even though his Annapolis peace process seems to have stalled with the violence between Israel and Gaza recently. So here's a radical thought. Maybe Israel should negotiate not just with the more moderate Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas and his wing of the government, which controls the West Bank, but also with the more radical and violent Hamas, which controls Gaza. This was once unthinkable, but reports this week say the U.S. State Department is actually considering this idea. It floated the idea as a topic for discussion on its website, which in itself was controversial, even that they asked the question. And one proponent of this kind of direct negotiation is the former Israeli foreign minister, Shlomo Ben-Ami. He served under Prime Minister Ehud Barak in the 90s and was involved in the Camp David peace process at the end of the Clinton administration. He is also a much-published author, including his most recent book from last year, Scars of War, Wounds of Peace, The Israeli-Arab Tragedy. He is in New York this week, and he is in our studio right now. Mr. Ben-Ami, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning.
Are you proposing that Israel negotiate directly with Hamas?
Well, I have been advocating such a course from the very beginning, from the moment that Hamas won the elections. I think you cannot discard those who won the elections, which they are the majority in the Palestinian polity, from a process. And if you want Annapolis to succeed, it must be as inclusive as possible.
Why would Hamas negotiate with you? Isn't Hamas dedicated to the destruction of Israel?
Well, yes, they have a very nasty constitution and a very nasty ideology. Nonetheless, they are there, and we need to see how we can co-opt them into the process and engage them. For example, now we have the issue of a war going on in Gaza. This war is derailing the Annapolis process, and therefore we need to negotiate with Hamas a ceasefire. The ceasefire is the only way to rescue the Annapolis process from collapse.
What would Hamas want in a larger negotiation, a final status negotiation? Anything you can identify?
Well, you see, a year ago, or perhaps a bit more, there was a platform that was negotiated between the prisoners of Hamas and the prisoners of Fatah, known as the Prisoners' Covenant. And the peace platform which they proposed as the basis for a national unity government was not that far apart from the Saudi peace initiative. So there is a possibility of having a national unity government between Hamas and Fatah that would agree on a peace platform that maybe Israel will find it very difficult to accept, but we go into the province of the negotiable. That is, we are not talking about positions that are entirely non-negotiable.
Right. But one big argument against the negotiation is that Hamas is committing acts of terror, and to make compromise with them now would be rewarding terrorism, which would promote more terrorism as a future negotiating tool for them or for some other group. What's your thinking on that?
Well, we need to be pragmatic about it. We didn't find an answer to Hamas rocket warfare against Israel. Hamas has been quite resilient in spite of international pressure, the siege, the destitution of the Palestinian population in Gaza. And Israel does not really have right now a military answer. I think we need to get out of the box of a military answer and try to engage this movement and see whether we can find an accommodation.
We can take phone calls for former Israeli Foreign Minister Shlomo Ben-Ami. Our phone number, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. The alternative strategy, the official strategy, as I understand it at this time, is to negotiate only with Mahmoud Abbas's branch of the government, make a peace with his group of Palestinian leaders. That would then go to a referendum of all Palestinians, and you'd be appealing to the Palestinian people over Hamas's head. Is that the current approach, and why isn't that better?
Well, this is the current approach. It is not entirely unrealistic. I'm not ruling out that possibility. However, there is a misconception here when we divide the Palestinians between moderates and extremists. I think that the moderates suffer right now from a very serious deficit of legitimacy, which means that if they want the deal that they will negotiate with Israel to be legitimate, they will have to strive for an agreement that would be as close as possible to the positions of the extremist, so that the extremist could not label it as a treacherous sellout. Therefore, there is not much of a difference, really, between what the radicals and the extremists and the moderates might aspire to achieve in such a deal. And we need to have, if we want the text of the agreement to be assumed by the entire Palestinian nation, we need a broad political support. Such a broad political support does not exist right now.
How seriously is the U.S. State Department considering a Hamas negotiation track? There was an article in the New York Times just yesterday, headline, U.S. may relent on Hamas role in talks. And apparently there's already some kind of indirect contact taking place through Egypt.
Well, I don't believe that this administration will engage Hamas directly or open political negotiations with Hamas. This will be a radical ideological shift that I'm not sure they will do. However, they understand, just as all the others, that is Israel, Abbas, and Egypt, they all understand that the war in Gaza and the specter of an Israeli invasion of Gaza would kill the Annapolis process. This is why the American administration seems to be encouraging the Egyptians to reach a settlement between Israel and Hamas over a ceasefire.
Are talks taking place already?
Oh, yes. The Egyptians are engaged. Secretary Rice was in Egypt not long ago, and I'm sure that the question of the ceasefire and America's support for such a ceasefire, my sense is that that happened already.
And you spoke to Secretary Rice in Washington, what, last week?
Yes.
Yeah. And were you talking about this idea?
Well, yes. I did propose an idea of a ceasefire, and with some technical issues pertaining to the need to prevent smuggling of weapons through the border between Egypt and Gaza. The secretary was attentive. She was listening, and I sense that as far as it has to do with a ceasefire, she understands the need for that. But she was very clear that when it comes to political negotiations between the United States and Hamas, this is not on the table.
Let's take some phone calls. Many people are calling in. Put on your headphones, Mr. Ben-Ami, if you would. You can hear the callers that way. And George in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, George.
Good morning, Brian. If I would wear the hat of Hamas for a minute, I believe that as a matter of being, that my organization depends on its loyalty from my fellow Arabs, in the sense that no land formerly held by Arabs can be held by anyone who's a non-Arab, whether they be a Jew in Israel or a Christian in Lebanon. That being the case, and Hezbollah says the same, and the Muslim Brotherhood says the same, what incentive is there for me as Hamas to give in on anything? If after all, you're coming to me and saying, well, we want to find a way to find some basis to talk with you, on what basis does one talk about anything that is lasting?
Well, I can see, obviously, that Hamas is not ready to recognize the State of Israel in any borders. In that sense, this is a situation that does not encourage negotiations. However, when a religious movement decides to go for elections and win elections, they need to deliver on stability, on employment, on economic development to their community, because they need the support of that community. Therefore, my sense is Hamas is definitely interested in a sort of a temporary settlement with Israel. I'm not saying they are going to sing the national hymn of the State of Israel tomorrow. I only say that they have a keen interest to establish a sort of stability with the State of Israel for a given period of time. This is a tactical shift. We need to do our utmost to turn the tactical shift of Hamas into a strategic change by first establishing a ceasefire with them, because there is an interest of all parties concerned to have a ceasefire. This might unleash a gradual process that would engage them in a wider peace process with Israel. This is not going to happen today or tomorrow, but we need to start changing the behavior of Hamas, because they are interested in a temporary agreement with Israel.
So here's, and George, thank you for your call, here's a kind of follow-up to that from a post on our comments page. It says, how will a ceasefire with Hamas help? Hamas and others who share their destroy Israel agenda have always been the spoilers for peace talks by committing acts of terror at cleverly planned times. That's what the listener writes. And in fact, right now, that's going on, isn't it? Because Hamas has sought to sabotage the Annapolis process by launching rockets against Israel from Gaza, drawing Israel into a new round of attacks, causing outrage among Palestinians that leads Abbas to feel he has to suspend the talks.
Well, two comments. During the Intifada, and even more recently, most of the terrorist attacks that were perpetrated against the Israelis came from Fatah, not from Hamas. That is, from the party of the moderate leader, because it doesn't control them. There is a young generation of militiamen in Fatah that continues to perpetrate acts of terrorism, and this has been the case until very recently. Now, the second part of the question was...
Hamas tries to sabotage the peace process.
Hamas is not interested in sabotaging the Annapolis process for a simple reason. They don't believe that it will bear fruits anyway. So they don't want to be seen as those who prevented the Palestinian people from reaching a settlement with Israel. They want to discredit the process, but not to sabotage it.
So you don't see the recent attacks as being timed to... harm the Annapolis process?
No, we have had rockets being launched on Israeli territory for 5 or 6 years now, even before the Annapolis process or the talks between Israelis and Abu Mazen on any kind of arrangement. The Hamas is interested in creating a new deterrent with Israel, and therefore they are interested now, after this round of violence, in a ceasefire for a while. I'm not saying they want it permanently. We need that for in order to rescue Annapolis. But from their viewpoint, this is not about undermining Annapolis. It is more about establishing a deterrent with Israel. This is a process of Hezbollahization of Hamas that has been taking place for quite a while.
What does that mean, the Hezbollahization of Hamas?
Yes, to develop a military force that would have a deterrent on Israel and go to rounds of clashes from time to time. So with Hezbollah, we don't have any issue pending, really. I mean, they are in a different state. We're not in the middle of a peace process with them. Whereas when it comes to Hamas, we need to do our very best to change the strategy of Hamas. And because they are part of the that nation, in fact, they are the democratic majority, a recent opinion poll gave to Mr. Haniyeh, the Hamas prime minister, more support than they give to Abu Mazen. And therefore, we cannot marginalize him, and we need to do our utmost to engage them.
Fred in Muncie, you're on WNYC with former Israeli Foreign Minister Shlomo Ben-Ami. Hello.
Yes, Shlomo Ben-Ami, I have to give you kudos for all of the wonderful work that you've done for the land of Israel and for Jews throughout the world. But I have to disagree with you on several issues here. First, as you know, what the destruction of Israel, quote-unquote, Chas v'Shalom, is really a religious imperative. And with a religious imperative, there are no concessions. And especially for Islamization, death is martyrdom. So therefore, whatever they say is really not going to reach a conclusion that you and I and the rest of the world might might want. We know in any of the ceasefires before, that's only been used because they have been put under military pressure by the IDF. And during any ceasefire, any lull in the fighting, they have just brought in heavier arms through the borders of Egypt and through the waters. Just without their renunciation of the idea of destroying the state of Israel and that all land is Islamic land, there really can be no sense of talking to them.
It's really, and Fred, I'm going to leave it there because our time is short. Yeah. It's really the same question as the previous caller asked, and it's the question of about two-thirds of the people calling in.
Yes. Well, just one brief remark. I'm not a subversive voice when it comes to Hamas. The majority of Israelis today, according to all polls and studies that we have, support negotiating with Hamas because they came to the conclusion that we have already exhausted all other possibilities.
So do you think now, this is a less controversial idea in Israel than it is in Brooklyn?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we see that in the opinion polls. Now, to your question... I think that we need to change our strategy, both us and the United States, when it comes to spoilers. We ask the spoilers, Iran, Syria, Hamas, to change their philosophy, to change their positions as a precondition for negotiations. And the result so far has been negative. Neither Iran, nor Syria, nor Hamas change their positions. So maybe we should try another way, and that is bring these spoilers to stop being spoilers as the outcome of the negotiations, not as the precondition. Let us try it. This is what I suggest when it comes to Hamas. I would suggest that also when it comes to Iran and Syria, because the current policy has failed resoundingly.
One more call. Lauren in West Orange. You're on WNYC. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Thanks so much for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
I've been married to a Palestinian from Gaza. He's from, if I pronounce it right, Deir el-Bala.
Deir el-Bala.
I've been to Israel, Palestine 6 times, and when Hamas was coming in, we first were like, oh, no, no. However, I go to the 92nd Street Y on discussions and such. Why doesn't anyone ever bring up, and I'm sure you're familiar with the groups, Irgun, Stern, and the Haganah groups, which were terrorist organizations, Menachem Begin and Moshe Dayan, and they got what they wanted. So, you know, I don't agree with Hamas, the way that they've gone, around things and declaring the destruction of Israel, which is very hard for them to do. Why doesn't anyone ever talk about these groups, these terrorist groups, when the British were occupying Palestine?
But what is going back to the history of 75 years ago accomplish? Can you hook that to something that helps forge a solution today, Lauren?
Yeah, because they organized and they got together with each other. So what I'm saying is to organize and to go back and see what was happening then and to form some kind of an alliance.
You're a historian, Mr. Ben-Ami.
Well, yes, that's true that movements, national movements, used terrorism as part of the struggle for independence. We saw it in Ireland, we saw it all over the place, and it happened obviously with Zionism. The question that was posed, however, by the previous call was that here we have the case of a religious ideology that is not susceptible, according to him, to change. And my answer to that was that you need to start engaging, and perhaps at some point down the road you will see a change. And by the very fact that Hamas decided to go to politics, which is something that Bin Laden will never do, and we need to be able to distinguish between the different Islamic groups. Once they decided to go to politics, they opt for the strategy of compromise. There is no other way. You cannot be in politics in order to impose eternal truth. So this is the difference between Hamas and other groups. And therefore, I think that it is a conventional wisdom that everybody has used terrorism on the way to statehood. Now the question is with a religious party. It seems to me that it is also susceptible to change if we address it in the proper way.
We just have a minute or so left. Do you think that the Annapolis process can succeed and a major peace deal be struck before President Bush leaves office?
I think that the text of a peace accord is doable, is possible, because the differences between the parties are minor. You mentioned my participation in Camp David. When we went to Camp David, we were an ocean apart. Now we are a river apart because we made a lot of progress. But the process will fail if we only have a text, and the context is the way we see it today, a war with Hamas, no ceasefire, a non-inclusive peace process that leaves outside the majority of the Palestinian population. And therefore, it is in this framework that I suggest engaging Hamas, because the process might fail, not because our failure in reaching a document, but because of our incapacity to implement it, given the context of fragmentation and division.
Do you have a role formally? You're with the out-of-power party, the Labour Party, and you're here speaking as an independent individual, certainly not for the government of Israel. Do you have a role to play, or are you an outsider and that's it?
It's absolutely independent. I do not represent the State of Israel, but I am a member of the Labour Party, which, contrary to what you said, is not in opposition. It is in government. But the Labour Party today forms part of the coalition, that is, all these ideas that I have been debating here, I mentioned them to the Prime Minister, to the Minister of Defense, to the Foreign Minister. This is not something that is entirely outlandish to them.
Well, as Israel approaches its 60th birthday, the discussion goes on and on and on and on. Hopefully something will happen by the time President Bush leaves office. Thank you very much coming in with us. Former Israeli Foreign Minister Shlomo Ben-Ami. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in just a minute, we'll check in with WNYC Political Director Andrea Bernstein on how our latest group journalism project is going, looking at the 11,000 pages of schedules that former First Lady Hillary Clinton released just yesterday. And then we'll look at the new seven deadly sins proposed by the Vatican. So stay with us.